हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 23. So then, Sutra 1126. Bhutari pada vyapadesho papattes chaivam. Bhuta, the living entities, adi, beginning with, pada, feet, vyapadesha, of the statement, upapattehe, for the reason, cha, also, evam, in this way. Brahman alone should be considered Gayatri because living beings, earth, body, and heart are mentioned as its four feet. Sutta Prakashika. This sutra explains why it is natural to interpret the word Gayatri to mean Brahman. The Upanishads state the following: Gayatri is everything. The four feet of Gayatri are speech, earth, body, and mind. Without Gayatri, being an incarnation of Brahman, it is not possible for these four things to be Gayatri's feet, since Gayatri incarnates from the skin of Brahma. Brahma, who is the guna avatar of the Supreme Lord, Gayatri is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Govindabhashya. Another reason is given to show that Gayatri is Brahman, not the meter. Bhutari pada vyaparesho papattes chaivam. Brahman alone should be considered Gayatri because living beings, earth, body, and heart, are mentioned as its four feet. Brahman alone should be considered Gayatri. Why? Because living beings, earth, body, and heart, are mentioned as the four feet of Gayatri. If Gayatri did not mean Brahman, then it would be meaningless to say that a meter has four feet consisting of living entities, earth, body, and heart. Therefore, the first statement of the section indicates that Brahman is everything. Thus, the word Jyotish refers to Brahman because of Yat in the next section concerning Jyotish, light, and the reference to the sky in both passages, Tripadasyamritam Divi, Chandogya Upanishad 3.12.6, and Paro Divo Jyotir Dipyate, Chandogya Upanishad. But so, you can see it's a very logical, straightforward point, is that if it's saying Gayatri, so the meter can't have these four feet, because the meter is just how the things are put together. Then you may say that the mantra itself then has all these things, so it's not because of the four. Because previous discussion argument was because it was saying that those four aspects of Gayatri, that's all the different aspects that are there. They were basing the argument on the meter. But here it's pointing out, how will meter have all these things? So it can't be meter. Right? So therefore, on top of that, it means then it must be the Lord. So Gayatri is an incarnation of the Lord. So it's expanding from Brahma, and Brahma is coming from the Lord. So therefore, then it has to mean the Gayatri. It means Brahman itself. Right? Because by previous ones, then everything comes from, everything goes back into. So we know it doesn't come from a meter and go back into a meter. Does that make sense? So the arguments are very, very practical. That's the interesting point. Very, very simple, very straightforward. Yes?
If it says that Gayatri is the incarnation from the skin of Brahma, and then somehow from this conclusion is that this is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord.
Because all these different aspects are coming from the Gayatri, the four feet. So that means living beings, earth, body, and heart, they're all coming from there. So where does all that come from? You know, because that all has to come from the Lord. You know, it says, as he expands, it doesn't mean it's not him. means it's him, it's not him. But what the point being made is it's not the jivas. Okay. That's the main point I'm trying to point out. Because otherwise, for the impersonalist, they want to show that everything is jiva. Mm-hmm. Because that means then it's illusion, that means then they have a shot, you know. Yes.
Like previously, yesterday we mentioned that Brahman is equal to four, that is Ekpat plus Tripat. And Gayatri is also having, you know, four things like over
yes.
So because Brahman is equal to Gayatri, does it mean that, you know, the right hand side, that is Ekpat plus Tripat, is equal to living beings, earth body and the heart? Then can we equate like that?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get that technical, because Gayatri, you can take it apart because it has 24 syllables into all the aspects of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get into that so much. Tantrics, that's their big thing. Because they only see the material energy, so they don't see it beyond that. But for us, then you have the thing, means you have the meter itself has the three, but then it also has the vyaharitis, right? Gayatri? As the Vyaharitis, yeah? So that's the fourth foot.
Okay.
Right? Because the three planetary systems.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so we're speaking of the Brahma Gayatri over here. The first one, out of the seven.
In Veda, if you're talking Gayatri, it'll always be Brahma. Because
okay.
The other ones that are there, those are Pancharatrik. Not that they're not in the Upanishads. In the Narayan Upanishad, which is the last section of the Taittiriya Upanishad, there basically all the Gayatris are. You know, so that people can't say they're not Vedic. But the thing is for the Vedic, when someone gets Upanayanam and that, they get initiated at the Brahma Gayatri. Like that. So that you're a Brahmana.
Mm-hmm.
So then the other Gayatris, that means there has to be a further initiation. So that's why then we will be considered Twija, because we have Brahma Gayatri plus we have the further Gayatris.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So your Om, so that will be the Lord, the living entities, and the internal potency. Plus it'll be the Dham, it'll be the pastimes, it'll be all that aspects. And then Burbu Viswa, then you're going to have the aspect of the ultimate aspect of happiness. You're going to have the position from which you're functioning, you're performing the activities, then the existence of that.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then that's going to be your aspect of living entities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right? Then you're going to have the Sambandha Abhideyan aspect, connected to the Lord. Right?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Yes.
We are often told that the Kam Gayatri Mantra is the sound of Krishna's flute, and I was just wondering, how does that fit into this discussion?
Because this is not about that Gayatri. This is about Brahma Gayatri. But flute means it's not different from him, because the point is it's all aspects of the Supreme Lord. It's all his expansion. So Gayatri already is an expansion. Right? Just because it's an expansion doesn't mean it's not the Lord. Does that make sense? So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that's the original mantra. Then expanding from that is the Kama Gayatri. And then expanding from that will be the Brahma Gayatri. And then expanding, that will be, because its initial point, it begins with Om, so that's the part that will come through here first. So on this side, we see Om as the original. And then we'll see it coming down to the Brahma Gayatri, into the Purusha Shukta, into the Veda, and then into all the other things. So they'll have that, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will be a derivative of all that, but actually it's the original. Because it'll be the last out here, but it's the original there.
Upside down.
Yeah, because it just goes backwards. So if you're coming here and then you get out and you get Om, then Om comes through and then you just reverse the whole thing. Right. You know, so then in the Kali Yuga you're chanting Hare Krishna, but actually it was the original. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense.
Okay. Lord Chaitanya explains.
Cool.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya explains that, I think, in this discussion with Prakashananda Saraswati. Yes. Okay. So in other words, they're trying to establish that all these different things that are talking about the Supreme, they're all talking about Brahman. They're not talking about the living entities. That's what we're trying to establish. Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.12.44. The science of logical argument, the Vedic goals of life, and also law and order, moral codes, and the celebrated hymns, Bhu, Bhuvas, and Swa, all became manifest from the mouths of Brahma. And the pranava, Omkara, was manifest from his heart. Footnote 15. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, logic and other types of knowledge arose from the eastern and other mouths in succession. The first four items, starting with logic, on Vikshiki, represent moksha, dharma, kama, and artha. Vyahrityaha means the individual words, burbhuvaswa, and their combination, burbhuvaswaha. These four arose from his four mouths. So you have om, bur, bhuva, swaha, like that. He's just going around. Because they all come from the forehead, so east is always the first. Which way he's facing, that's east. You know, means he's facing and the front part of his body is facing. Right? You'll call that east. Mm-hmm. And then the head off his right shoulder, that will be then south. The head at his back, that will be west. And the head at his left shoulder will be north.
That makes like sense. That. Huh? That makes sense.
Yeah.
West would be the back.
Yeah, like that, yeah.
But, I mean, whenever he turns with his body,
uh-huh. It's still east.
That's what I'm asking.
Means you take it that wherever you're facing, that's east. Just like, let's say you're doing a yajna. So now, if you're sitting east, then that's nice. But when you set up the yajna, you set it up whichever way you're facing, that's east. So when it says, do this at the north side of the fire kunda, that means on this side, the left side. Now, if you're also facing east, then it means it's on the north side according to the direction set up, and it also happens to be the north in the cardinal directions. So that's why you try to get the two lined up, because you're going to do that. Because otherwise, if you're not facing, still, the ritual goes nicely, but the placement of the things isn't quite as well. That's why in the Vedic, is you always try to line things up with what is recommended. Because it's not arbitrary. You know what I'm saying? When it's in the east, the sun rises from the east. So then those things are done there. The water's in the west, Varuna's in the west. You know, saying Yama's in the south, you have Kuvera in the north. Now, in the south, you follow Dharma, right? If you're situated in Dharma, right? Facing the north, from Dharma comes what? Artha. So Kuvera's in the north. You understand? So that's the thing. If you want art, then you have to do Dharma. So that's the thing. They're all exactly in the, how do you say, the southeast corner, then that's Agni. Like that. But how does fire, like let's say fire is not doing so well and you want it to do better, what do you do?
Air.
So the northwest, that's Vayu. Right, so it blows across this way. Then that's what, so they connect. So everything is connected. So that's why in the Vedic there's recommendations. We may just say, oh, these are just, you know, just rules, but no, they're exactly according to how the creation is, which is based on, you know, Krishna's, the way he likes things. So it's a specific order: who's where, who's situated where, everything, and then who's in charge of what, all these different things. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is you're trying to get all that lined up. And you do the best you can. But if you just say, oh, it's not important, but the point is that's actually how the creation is made, if we like it or not. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. We have to remember is that in the Vedic concept is you have the Lord, then you have Brahma, then you have the Prajapatis, the Manus, like this, the great. This is the way it comes down until it gets to Bharat Varsha, right? And if we take the modern concept, we crawled out of from under a rock somewhere, literally, and then coming up, and then somehow or another we're going to compare, because you know, under my rock, we didn't, you know, we didn't do things like that. So therefore, you know, the universe and God's creation is according to how I feel it should be, not the way it actually is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the whole point, is that it already is established how things are. Why, if you do things in a certain way, it works. That's just the way it is. So you line the things up, it's better. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in your house. Okay, you have the picture and you have the chair, right? So let's say you have two windows, you know, and then you have the picture in the middle and the chair is off center. Will it work? Will it be comfortable? No, you have to shift it over so the chair and the picture are in line so it matches the wind. Everything, then people come in and go, oh, this is nice. If you come in and go, oh, it's okay, you know, it's nice stuff, but it's not. So that's what the Vedic rules are about, lining everything up. So all these arguments that we don't have to do this and that and all that, is, you don't have to. But the point is then you have to be situated more in Krishna consciousness. But you can't take all the advantages of a neophyte devotee and then at the same time claim you're a Paramahamsa. It does not work. Paramahamsa, you're chanting all the time. You're not cared about it. You don't have any attachments. Or you have attachments, line it up. That's the whole point. You can't have your cake and eat it. But that's the modern idea, is how to do that. Yes?
I'm just trying to understand Brahma, he is Kama Gayatri from Krishna's flute.
Yes.
So then he, from his mouth, the Brahma Gayatri comes out, or the same Kama Gayatri?
The same, no, it means, what it's meaning is from the one he's initiated through the Kama Gayatri.
Yeah.
Right? So now he becomes, how you say, his position now is initiated person in the Sampradaya. So now he becomes that first one in the Brahma Sampradaya.
Right.
He makes the creation through the Brahma, through the Gayatri.
Yeah.
Because you have everything's Bhur-Bhuva-Swa is going to be there. So everything means to deal with the middle, with the situation of it. You know, in other words, there's activities. Like on Earth, the activities done here has an effect on the whole universe. So this is Punyabhumi. This is where action is performed.
Yeah.
That's why it says humans are in the mode of passion, because of the aspect of they're doing the activities. The demigods, then they're in the position of, you know, results. You perform your good results here, it's there. And then where is all this situated? In Antariksha. Because Antariksha is everything around. So you have to have a position in which it exists. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So he produces everything from the Brahma Gayatri, the Kama Gayatri. Because from that you can tell all the different things, all how everything works and all that. That's why there's a consistency in the universe. That's why observant people can see patterns, and then they'll call that science. Right? But the problem is they don't know how scientific it is, how it goes back, what are the origin of all these formulas that they see. You know, like we said, the point of relativity. And so the idea of relativity is supposed to be able to explain everything. That's what the quantumists are trying to do. They're trying to establish a formula which explains all phenomena in the creation as they know it. So yes, everything's relative to everything else, but that they can't get a bearing on. They can get symptoms, because the point is everything's relative to the Lord. Mm-hmm. He's actually the standard. He's what makes things work. So how much and what aspect of the Lord is manifest, that's what makes that particular phenomena. Right? So that means it goes all back to the Kama Gayatri. So that's how he creates. In another, I think in Nrisimha Purana, it's explaining how in one creation, then Nrisimhadeva appears to Brahma, and he gives them the Nrisimha Mahamantra, that Ugram Viram Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
And with that he creates.
Right?
Because whether you're using three or four, it doesn't matter, because you're still dealing with Shankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. It's just a matter of Shankarshan and Prajumna in their own categories, or are they considered together in Sambandha? It means they're both part of Sambandha, but are you splitting Sambandha, you know, like officially into two, or you're just two aspects of one thing? So if it's three, it'll be two aspects of one. If it's four, then they have their own area. Mm-hmm. That's all that's happening. So whether using mantra with three or four, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So then from that, expanding from the Kama Gayatri, then you get the Brahma Gayatri. And so that has that four aspects. You can say that the Gayatri also, the meter has three, but you always have a Bij. So that will be the fourth. It's just in the Brahma Gayatri, the Bij is a bit extended. Right? But that's what's included in Kama. Does that work? Yeah? Yes.
It sounds here like all these syllables are emanating simultaneously.
Means the Gayatri itself, so if it comes out one after the other or it all manifests at once, doesn't so much matter.
I was just thinking about before you were saying that it starts with Om and then from that.
Yes. Because you get Om, you get the Vyaharitis, and then you get the Gayatri itself. The three parts of the Gayatri. Does that make sense? That's how it's expanding.
Okay, so it's not actually simultaneous. Or am I thinking too linearly?
It means that aspect doesn't matter, because the point is Om expanding that, you get Bhubhu Vaswa, expanding that, you get the Gayatri. You know, and then Gayatri expands, you get the Purusha Shukta. You know, which we've been, that's what we're just part of, what's it called? Tripada Syamritam Divi, that's Purusha Shukta. Like that. And so then, and from the Purusha Shukta, you get the Veda. So the four Vedas, because they each have their own Purusha Shukta, which is, they're all slightly different. Saying the same thing, describing the same thing, just, they, how do you say? The way it's chanted, slightly the wording, certain number of verses, these things are adjusted, these are different. And then from that expands the whole rest of the Veda. So, yeah.
Yeah. About the different Dishas, you know, we discussed, Agni, Vayu and all. So like, for these 10 Dishas, they are the controllers? Like Yama?
Yes, yeah, they're the controllers of those. But they're controlling with Krishna's potency.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to bring out here, is that it's not about the demigods, it's not about all these others, it's actually about the Lord Himself. Because we'll say the Gayatri is from that, everything expanded, so you'll say everything's come from Gayatri, everything goes back into Gayatri. But the point is Gayatri is only a potency. It's not that Gayatri is the source of energy. Gayatri is an energy, so it's coming from the Supreme. So? Yeah. Yes.
Can I say that Brahma was initiated by Kama Gayatri?
Yes.
And he created with Brahma Gayatri.
Basically, but the point is Brahma is an expansion of Kama.
Yeah.
Because if you understand Kama, you'll understand Brahma.
And Brahma Gayatri would mainly be for the creation, for his job?
Yes, because all the aspects of the creation come out of the 24 syllables of the Gayatri. You know, and then you have the fourth part of the Vyaharitis and all that is there. But what makes it all work is Om. Mm-hmm. The Lord, the living entity, and His internal potency. That's what makes it function. Without that, it just won't work. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes?
Brahma Gayatri, 28 syllables?
No, 24.
24.
It's 23 and a half, technically. But like that. So it's some grammar thing. But if you count it, it'll be 24.
Okay.
But then you have the Om and you have the Vyaharitis. So that way you get 28. But it's not that the meter itself is 24. Mm-hmm. You know, 8, 8, 8. So you get 24. Then it always, there's always, you know, some kind of bead syllable on the front.
Mm.
Like that. Just in the Brahma, that it's a little bit bigger. Mostly it's just always one. But you can have expanded. Like you see some mantras and they have so many. Like that, yes.
Don't want to get too far off the topic, but you know, the Om in the Brahma Gayatri mantra, then there's Aim in the Guru mantras, and then there's Kleen in the other mantras. So what is Aim and what is Kleen?
Kleem is the Kam Bija, so it's all the different breakdowns of the Lord's pastimes. Aim will be breakdowns of knowledge. Like that. You know, in other words, we're gaining knowledge from the Guru, so it'll come in those three aspects. But the Kam Bija, then that's bigger. That has the aspect of the four, so that's the origin of what everything else is coming from. So Om is the most succinct of what the Kam Bija is giving. So all the other aspects are in Kama and in Om. Like that. Yeah. Okay, Bhagavatam first reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:12:44. The science of logic. Oh no, we just did that one. Footnote 15, we just did those. Then 3:12:45. Thereafter, the art of literary expression, Ushnik, was generated from the hairs on the body of the Almighty Prajapati. The principal Vedic hymn, Gayatri, was generated from the skin, Tristup from the flesh, Anustup from the veins, and Jagati from the bones of the Lord of the Living Entities.
Those are different meters?
Yes, these are all meters. So in other words, the meters are all the body of Brahma. And so he's expanding from the Lord. So basically it all goes back to Krishna. That potency is there.
This is Vedanga.
No. These are the at this point we're talking about the different meters. So Tristup, Anustup, Jagati, these are all meters.
Yeah. They also called as Chandana.
Chandan.
Right.
Yes.
From the literary expression going from the hairs of the body, it makes sense that you hear something wonderful to make your hair stand on.
Yeah. Yes. The art of literature. Yeah. So that's why, because there's the connection. That's what we're saying. The Vedas, everything's connected. It's not arbitrary. The sciences, and you can take each one of those and get down, and you know, it's got so much. It's unlimited. That's why Ananta Sesh can be, you know, with thousands of mouths, can be talking since time immemorial and still never gets to the end. Because it's unlimited how each breaks down, and how each little one, you know, it's just what is there originally. You know, it's like we're saying, Purana is actually 4 billion verses. But Sukadev Goswami, Vyasadeva then cut it down to, you know, 400,000 essential verses. You know. So it's very, very small compared to its original. So that's the point, is that we're saying, oh, this is so technical and this and that. This is just, you know, essential points. Like that. You know, enough to make it work, enough to get out of the material world, enough to develop love for Krishna. Like that. But other than that, it goes on. So that's why those that don't understand this, then they'll think Radharani is cooking unlimitedly, you know, and she never cooks the same preparation twice. So therefore, then there has to be, you know, how do you get gross, you know, I mean, how do you get that variety without gross changes? So therefore, one of the preparations she must be cooking for pizza, I mean, for Krishna's pizza. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, but the point is, and then pizza, and then that means she never cooks it again eternally?
No.
No, there's variety in pizza, so there's no variety in anything else? So that's the thing, is that the subtleties that are there in something, just where you put it, how you deal with it, just a little bit, just like, let's say, you're putting, how you say,
pineapple?
That's another one. See, we should be very careful about, you know, pineapple. Offensive Opera. Behavior. Opera. Yes. Yes. We have to remember that the term, when you put pineapple on pizza, is Hawaiian pizza. Mm-hmm. And Hawaiian are known for their aboriginals. Yeah. Yes.
Also, Prabhupada said it's a place where devas descend.
Wow.
It's heavenly.
Oh, okay, so now we should say that he's giving the divine pizza.
This is the Purva Paksha.
Yeah, the only problem is in Ayurveda it says if you mix milk and pineapple, it's poison.
Oh.
So the cheese and the pineapple won't
vegan.
Have a problem.
It's
even
bigger
operation. Yeah, maybe it's just... that's two. One more and you have to leave. A pineapple vegan pizza? Oh my god.
It doesn't deserve the name pizza.
Just get out.
Yes. Okay. So the whole point is that it's unlimited in what she can do. Because it's, the subtleties are there, the detail in that. And so Krishna can appreciate that difference. We may not. You know, just like we see is that when Krishna comes dressed up as a gopi to in Jabat, like that, then when they find out, when they ask, you know, where she's from and that, so she's come from the heavenly planets, then they say, oh, then you should sing us a song. And so then, you know, so she says, okay, what shall I sing? And so they pick the most difficult raga in the most difficult method, like that. Like, because you have here, you have sagrama, magrama, and gagrama. These are the different grammas. They call it villages in which the notes are structured. And so, depending on what it is, if you adjust it, the 22 notes stay the same, but they shift. And so, by shifting, it gives a totally different sound. So, sagrama is whatever you hear in classical music, that's all you ever hear. Some people can talk about magrama. They say gagrama is gone. They don't know about it. So they ask her to sing in gagrama. You know, and then in a particular meter that's very difficult. So that most difficult raga and the most difficult thing like that, because she's from the heavenly planet, so for her that'll be easy. And then Krishna just sings it. You know, and they can appreciate it. So the whole point is the subtleties that are there and how they do things is so great that when we... through aropia, force upon here that, oh, unless that's there, then there's not. But if that's there, then, you know, what about tamales? You know, what about, quinoa? You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, why that? Because we have a preference for it. It's important to us. So the connection of that, rather than say, they cook it there for my eating, is that Rupa Goswami says is no. Whatever is regional dishes that are considered special, you can offer those to the Lord. So yes, the Lord does eat pizza in his pancharatric pastimes. You know, and here as the archa does that. But in Goloka, no. You know, because Bhaktivinoda Thakura says what Mother Jashoda is cooking. And it doesn't include that. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, that's why speculation is not used. Because otherwise, according to our own attachments, then the aropia will put all kinds of things.
Impose it on.
Yeah, we'll impose. So that's the thing, is that say no, but it's just like, yes, you could say like that, but that is the value of a mental speculator, not of a devotee. It's possible, because that's the life of an academic, is the possibilities. You know, and you could say is that. It's actually the mood of a materialist. It just happens to be through the intellectual. It's just like, why have, you know, I'm not sure what is the standard now, that 30 pairs of shoes in your closet is options, possibilities. That's the whole point, is that you could enjoy this way or that way. So all it is they'll say, oh, this gross, having 30 shoes, that's the, you know, but we're intellectually, it's the same thing. Whether it's in karma or gyan, it's all about just enjoying in the way that you think is enjoyable. It has nothing to do with the Lord, not from this perspective. It's not that what it is attractive about the pizza is Krishna, but that's Paramatma. So Paramatma is attractive, not pizza. Right? And there's certain laws that are followed, so it works. Yes.
So you speak about the subtleties in the spiritual world. And now I'm a pretty gross guy. And I, I could never fit there.
The point is there's training. The point is, if you are open to the concept, then you can be trained. If you're not open to the concept, then why go there? That's the whole point. You know, so if you're open to the concept, that would be great, though I have no qualification. That just adds to the, you know, I'm so unqualified, I'm this and that, but I just surrender to you. You know, that aspect that you see the acharyas present. So it's not that we have to have material qualification to get there. It's not that your connoisseurs are going to go back to Godhead before, you know, how you say, your dock workers or something like that, you know. So the whole point is surrender to Krishna is what's there. Because all these things, one will be trained. It's not that you just show up there and you know everything. You'll be trained. It's actually how it works. And different individuals in the spiritual world are you know, master in different aspects. And so then you learn the different things from different individuals. So it's all personal. But the difference being there is we don't have, you know, a brain full of mush over there. So they show you once, you know how to do it. Right? You know what I'm saying? And so there's unlimited aspects, but if you understand the principles, then from there you can develop. So everything will be taught, but, you know, we have, you know, decent brain over there. Is that okay? Okay. Yes.
For this line of thinking, almost as if we're saying that we're purporting an avenue of freedom, but actually we're purporting an avenue of limitation because we're seeing it through the conditioning of that.
It has to be that, because it can, oh, how can it be all the Vedic is all that, but then we'll replace it with a more restricted. We just, point is why that, we don't know.
So it's just perspective.
Yeah, it's just perspective. So it doesn't have reasons behind it, right, other than I like it. Well, in the Vedic, you may like it, but that's because it has all these things that falls into line. You know, just like you go into a house that's not according to Vastu, it may be set up nice and it's okay. You know, you don't see anything wrong with it. But if you go into one that's set up according to Vastu, it's comfortable. You just feel it's relaxed, it's nice. That's all that the Vedic is doing. Because it's all Krishna, so you're taking everything in it. Since it is Krishna, it's situated in Krishna, you're just taking part in situating it nicely in that. Naturally, then it's comfortable. That's all you're doing. It's like lining up the, you know, the dots, you know, getting everything to match on each other and stuff. Like that. Yes?
I think he's answering that question.
Oh, okay. You want to know if it was dots or overlay or, you know, you got to, you know, yeah. That's it.
According to Vastu, if you have your well in the south eastern corner of your property, and that's where you're drawing your water, all the women in the house will be upset all the time.
Yes.
That's exactly where my well was.
Okay.
I didn't consult Vastu when I drilled the well there. That's a good spot for the well.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's why the Vedas are there, because the southeastern corner is the fire corner. That's the women's corner.
Yeah, and I just want to let you know that for the entire time we were living there, she was always upset.
Yeah, because it's water and they're fire. Nice. So water and fire don't go so well together. Mm-hmm. So yes. So that's the whole point, is that it just makes it comfortable. We're not interested in it because we get the material benefit. We are interested because that's the laws that Krishna says. And so then from that, then it'll be, you know, because even that's right, something else will go wrong. That's the whole point. There's always going to be.
After the divorce, I thought if I just consulted Vastu, I might have not.
That's it. Yeah, it was all the well.
It certainly wasn't me.
Yeah, of course not. It was the well. Had to be the well.
Old well that ends well. But old well that ends well.
Ends well, yeah. Yeah, so you go back to Godhead, it ended well, so then all the placement of the well that got you to... So then.
Yeah. Anyway, I learned that after the divorce.
Yeah. No, it's always like that.
I was thinking, you know, why did I put my well there?
Yeah. I remember once we were setting up a hut you know, it was for one devotee, and whatever, he's a really good manager, really good organizer, always successful at things. And so then I said, okay, what do you want where? Because this hut had been set up in a particular way. And he came in and said, because I was using certain things from Vastu, but there's other things that you can do also. And so he says, you know, he came in and said, oh, I want this change, this. And so what he had done is he had adjusted it so it's actually more successful. But he didn't know Vastu. Right. You know, so that's what it means, according to the karma and stuff, then you'll naturally pick something, you know, and then if not, then you pick something that's not, you know. Like we have that farm, I think it's the Sydney farm. It's on the wrong side of the mountain. Nothing works. While on the other side of the mountain, where you're supposed to do it, it's super prosperous. That's why they bought in that area, because they're great farms. But over on that side, it's expensive, and on this side, it was cheap. So they thought it's the same area. But that's why it was cheap. Yeah, it didn't work. So it's just Gaya. That means that all these things are just so that life goes more easily. Because that's what Prabhupada says. You want to make life so it's comfortable. Comfortable means not uncomfortable. Right? It's not that it's enjoyable. It just means it's not a disturbance. So therefore, things like this, where you put the well, it just creates, there's no disturbance. Things are peaceful. Then in that peaceful environment, then you can be Krishna conscious. But if in the peaceful environment we get into sense gratification, then, you know, then it all becomes lost. Like that. You know, that's the idea. So if we use it for upliftment, then it continues, that knowledge, that facility. And if we don't, then it's lost.
Why devotees are disregarding it, because otherwise they get too comfortable. Better they not be comfortable.
That's okay, but then don't talk about it and don't worry about comfortable and don't get upset that someone else is more comfortable. You know what I'm saying? There has to be a consistency. You can't say we don't worry about all these things and at the same time totally that's all you worry about. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the thing, is that if you're not worried about it, then you don't worry about it. And if you're worried about it, then you have to follow the Vedic. But if you're not worried about it, still we follow the Vedic because it's for Krishna. You know, I think. So that's the whole idea, is that being for Krishna, then we would follow it. We would have no reason not to. You know, as is pointed out, the Uttamadhikari, then, even though he doesn't have to follow the rules because he doesn't need them as identity. We follow the rules because we need it as identity. How do you place yourself unless you have an identity? How do you gain that identity? You either use the Vedic system or you use the speculative system. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the Uttamadhikari doesn't need it because they are already situated and I'm servant of Krishna. They have no problem. Right? So, not having that problem, they don't have a problem in following the rules. So you see, the Uttamas, they'll always follow the rules. They have no problem. They don't need it as an identity. That's what it means they don't have to follow the rules. Because they don't have to have that to situate themselves, so therefore, okay, this is what I do. It's just like this. Okay, let us say we have, okay, the person. Okay, they're a man, they're a Brahmin, they're a pujari, they're doing this particular puja. So all that's identity. And then there'll be the other person that they're a grihasta, they're wealthy, and they want to do a particular puja, and so that makes them the yajaman. So now, what's the relationship between the two? Right? The priest and the yajaman. So then the priest is the senior, the yajaman is following what the priest says, that's what yajaman does. But because he's wealthy, then, okay, then we can do this kind of a thing. You know, if he wasn't wealthy, then we would make it simple like this. You know, he's more knowledgeable and all that as a Brahmin, so the Yajaman is more respectful. Or he knows how to do it, so he's respected just enough for the thing. So that way you know how to get along. Now let's say we take someone who's a Paramahamsa. They just see all living entities as you know, associates of the Lord, because Paramatma is living with them, and everything about them, their nature, the wealth they have, the grihasthaness they have, everything like that, that's all coming from the Lord. Therefore, they're respecting him on the, like the Lord. Do they need that I'm a Brahmin and you're the Ajaman to be able to interact and be respectful? You understand? No. That's the meaning of they don't need to follow the rules and regulations. Not that they don't need to, means now they just don't do anything. If they want, if they don't, if they're not interested in interacting socially, they can do that. You know, like Vamsi Das Babaji, he would do that. He just didn't care. Right? So, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did forbid his disciples from seeing him. It was a rule. One devotee could go and take him things and see that everything was all right. No other disciples could go there. So, therefore, when so regularly in the Shastra it says the Paramahamsa doesn't have to follow the rules, is that meaning then he just is, you know, goes feral? You know? No. It means he doesn't need the rules to have an identity so that he can have a relationship with the Lord or with anybody else. Because they're so situated in service to the Lord that they don't require it. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. So then in that way, then it becomes very nice. But this whole whimsical thing, you can just do whatever you like and that's your Paramahamsa, then that's, you know, so that's that perfect mix, you know, that feralness of the Paramahamsa and the attachedness and do whatever you like of the neophyte. It's like the perfect combination, you know. But as we see, Shastra doesn't really recommend that. It means if you want to go, you want to advance, go back to Godhead, you know, get some benefit, then you don't do that. You want to stay here? Hey. Right. One has to remember, 33 million demigods, those are the guys in charge. Right? Then they have all the people that live on the planet. Right? So you're talking about billions and billions. Why do you think when you look up you see so many stars? Right? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about tons.
28 crores.
28 crores. Yeah.
Mentioned in the Quranas.
Wow.
All the demigods are all the demigods are stars or just the main ones?
It means 28 crores. It means a crore is 10 million. So 28 10 millions.
2.8 million.
Huh?
I heard somewhere that Indra has like 13 planets or something like that, 23 planets, something like that.
20, I think it's 22.
Okay. Yeah, that's just Indra.
Yeah, but then all the people are living there.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, we're not talking about little prince here. You know, it's just Indra sitting on that little ball like that, you know, at a 45 degree angle and hoping he doesn't fall off. Right? Yeah. So. No? Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot, and so that means then there's tons of people there. So if one is interested in Krishna, is able to connect things to Krishna and has that theological aspect, but you know has that total attachment and considers that a very important part of his process, then that's what the heavenly planets are for. Because the heavenly planets is just devotees. Right? The Asuras, they go to the lower heavenly planets. But the higher, what we call heaven, it's all devotees. So therefore, you know, you want to have a philosophy like that, hey, you know, the doors of Swarga are open, you know.
Well, how can they all be devotees?
Why can't they be devotees?
Well,
what would be the problem?
Well, I'm just thinking because one doesn't need, one can be a gross materialist and go to heaven and planet.
Yeah, but he has to be theistic accept the supremacy of the Lord. Whether that means anything to him personally, that's another thing.
Okay. But even if he...
But they accept the supremacy of the Lord. Well, the demons don't. They just accept their own plans as supreme.
Even if they recognize the Lord to be impersonal?
They do but it means the impersonal, that means they would be in the higher, they'd be in Satyaloka. But we're talking about in the realm of enjoying yourself. Because, see, it means if you're detached, what do you care if you're going to follow rules? Or if you don't follow rules, you don't want to follow the Vedic, but there's a good chance that such a renounced person doesn't follow the Western either. Right? Does that make sense? But what we're talking about are those who profess the Western values and lifestyle as, you know, the only lifestyle. The Vedic is not actually practical, or nor should it be followed. In fact, it's considered something lesser. At the same time, they're interested in devotional service. So what's that mean? They're just interested in the bodily concept. Right? And so devotional service gets them some facility. Right? So then, naturally, heavenly planets is for them. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Because that's what Prabhupada said. The neophyte means if you remember Krishna at the time of death, you go back to Krishna. That doesn't matter what situation you are. But if you don't, then a neophyte will go to the heavenly planets, a Madhyama will be born in the family of devotees. Does that make sense? So that's why those who are born in the families of devotees, they're not meant to go to Harvard. And those that think they are, is that, you know, why be a devotee? You know what I'm saying? Now, if you're from a rich, wealthy family and this and that, then you're going to Harvard. That's just continuing the same line. Because you came from heavenly planets, born in rich families, wealthy, aristocratic, religious, and that, like that. So they're already materialists. But because of that, they have the best opportunity for taking up devotional service because they have time. Right? Time and interest. Does that make sense? So that's how you decide. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're taking a Madhyamadikari, which is a preacher, which may be more advanced than actually you are as a grihastha, and then expecting them to lead a materialistic lifestyle, that's not fair. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not fair.
It doesn't work anyway.
It doesn't work anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you have to have brain. Right. Yeah, that's the point. To go to Harvard means you're smart. Yeah, really smart, actually. Is that? Yeah. Okay. Sutra 1127. Upadesha bhedan neti chen nobhayasmin ap yavirodhat. Upadesha, of instruction, bedat, because of the difference. Na, not, iti, thus, chait, if. Na, not, upayasmin, in both places. Api, also, avirodhat, because of non-contradiction. If one argues that the statements have different meaning in relation to the sky, that is not so, since there is no contradiction in the two statements. Right? So, if there were contradiction in the statements, then you can understand is that they're not contradictory, they're just talking about different aspects of something. But here it seems there's no contradiction, so they are talking about the same thing from the same perspective. Right? So if there's contradiction, we could be talking about two different things that ultimately go back and have a common point, or it can be one point, two different views of it. But here is that there's no contradiction between it, so therefore it's talking about one thing at one time. So, yeah. Sutra Prakashika. In the scriptures, two seemingly contradictory descriptions of Brahman are found. In one passage, they locate the personality of Brahman as above the spiritual world. In the other, they locate him inside it. Hence, the objector alleges these passages must be referring to two different objects. The Sutrakara resolves this doubt by showing here there is no contradiction. He employs a bird analogy to assert that the Supreme Personality of Godhead may, in the spiritual world or on it, may be, yeah, probably meaning a
bee.
Bee is good. Okay, for it makes no difference. Ultimately, the eternal residence of the Supreme Lord, Tripada Vibhuti, is beyond the material realm, Ekapada Vibhuti. Right, because we're still in the conception of the beyond. So how you say? you know, in or on means on the transcendental platform, or in means within the spiritual, like that. They're both, that's what he's saying. They're the same thing. It doesn't matter. Like that. Like, let's, yeah. Like, you're, let's say you're, there's a car, and there's a person sitting there. Is he in the car or on the car?
In the car.
He's in the car, but at the same time, what's he sitting on? The car. We'll generally, by convention, say on the car means he's got to be on the bonnet or the roof or like that. But then, because you say, because there's a roof, what do we put the top down? So is he in or on? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing.
Are you in the television or on television?
Yeah. Yeah, in the television, on the television. You can see he's inside there. He must be inside.
For different vehicles like bus, it works even better. You're on the bus and in the bus.
Yeah.
The convention
is
both.
Yeah. It uses both. Yeah, cars they seem to use the one. Yeah.
Train.
Yeah.
Plane. Same.
Yeah. So somehow another car gets its own special.
Because there are some people who sit on the car.
Yeah. No, that is there. Yeah, especially here in India. Yeah, those little dinky things in this. What is it? Those little.
They like to do it in America. It's called car surfing, and many people die doing it. By the way, just to let you know, they stand on the roof while the cars, and young men of a certain age and a certain temperament, they stand on the roof while the cars and see how fast they can go down the highway while they stand on the roof.
Yeah, that shows they're not intelligent, because in India they all sit down. So no one falls off. So.
There are no highways anyway.
Yeah, but you have to know where to sit. Murari Gupta was telling, says, the place to sit, you want to sit one third of the way back from the front. You divide the bus into three and sit in the first one third, right at that point. Because if you sit before that, when you go and the branches come, the wind of the bus pushes the branch up. So if you're too far forward, you'll still get hit. And if you're too far back, the wind of the bus it starts dropping. So that's the exact point, that if you're there, the branches will always go over your head. Doesn't mean you don't duck also, but yeah. So it's lack of piety. So that's why it's called Punya Bhumi, is that if the things that went on here were done anywhere else in the world, you know, everyone would be dead. You know, but somehow or another here, due to piety, nothing goes wrong.
Not particularly stupid, they're just particularly drunk when they do that.
Yeah, well, that means it does have some effect on the how you say intelligence quota, I think. A quotient?
Quotient,
yes. Okay. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Someone may object that the sky means the same thing in the two verses. Footnote 16. The 3 feet of the Lord are nectar in the sky, Divi. The light which shines above the sky, Divaha, is also within man. The Siddhanta is given in the sutra, Upadesha Beidan Netichen Nopayasmin Apyavirodhat. The objection that because the two scriptural passages employ the word dyu in two different cases, locative and ablative, therefore they describe two different objects, which cannot both be Brahman, is not a valid objection. The use of the two different causes does not mean causes does not mean that the two passages must describe two different things. Yeah, because otherwise you say he's coming from home, he's going to the market, then it's two different cases. And so then, you know, does that mean it's a different person? Mm-hmm. One's Jekyll and one's Hyde? You know, yeah. Like that. Purva Paksha. Tripada Samritam Divi. The 3 feet of the Gayatri are nectar in the sky. Has sky, in the locative case, the sky acts as the support. In the other sentence, Paro Divaha, the light is above the sky. Sky is in the ablative case. Thus, Gayatri and light cannot refer to the same object, since they are differently placed according to the teachings. Upadesha bedhat. Right? Mm-hmm. So they're again, you know, using the element of the teachings. So ablative means will be a causative.
Ablative means beyond Krishna.
No, but I'm just saying
origin.
Origin. Okay. Yes.
But it is separate from the subject. Ablative is separate from the subject, like the leaf falls from the tree, you know.
Yes, the leaf, but it's coming from the tree. Yes. So the point is if it's ablative, means it's what is coming from what here.
Yeah, it's used for origin and for comparison. If you say something is further than something else, you use the ablative. Mm-hmm. Or when it's beyond something else, then that other thing is the origin and it's further from it.
So like bed, bath, and beyond.
Exactly.
Okay.
It would be in ablative.
In ablative, okay.
So it is between sky and the light, the jyoti that comes off of the sky. So sky over here will be the actual ablative, the subject.
Okay.
From whom the light comes.
Okay. And the light, but the light is the locative here. Oh, no, the sky is in the locative here. But here you have the sky is locative, and then you have the sky as ablative.
Yeah.
Oh, so they're saying it's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So the sky can't be both. Okay. Siddhanta, that is not so. Why? So very interesting. They don't beat around the bush. They just say, no. And then they explain it. No. The sutra answers by saying that there is no contradiction, avirodhat, in the two teachings, upayasmin, since both mean the locative case. A parrot sitting on top of a tree is said to be in the tree and above the tree. So the Lord is in the sky, on top, above the sky. Though the teachings look different, the meaning is the same. Thus, there's no contradiction. Right? Because the same bird, he's on the tree, he's above the tree, he's in the tree. Because you say, where's the bird? Oh, he's above the tree, but he's still on the tree. But because he's there, you'll say he's in the tree. The bird is sitting in the tree. You know, so that's the point. It's the same thing. Okay. Bhagavatam reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.19. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences by the 1/4 of his energy in which all the living entities exist. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the three higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings. 20. The spiritual world, which consists of 3/4 of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world, and it is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family life and who do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the three material worlds. So, it's, you know, just point, it's beyond. So it's talking about the same place. Like that. So it's beyond, so it's above, but at the same time as the Lord is in. He's above, he's in. Adhikarana 11. Okay, so that establishes that the Lord is all these different things. Right? So he's sky, he's life. What else was he?
Jyoti.
Akash, yeah.
Suryanarayana.
Yes.
Prana.
Yeah, prana. And so now here's another reference to prana. Mm-hmm. Paranta prana adhikaranam. Sutra reference 1128-31. Adhikarana Prakashika. Adhikarana 11 asserts that the prana mentioned in Kaushitaki Brahmana 3.2 refers to Brahman. It focuses on a statement made by Maharaj Indra to his beneficiary Pratardhana. See, it's just because something is obscure doesn't mean that it's not authority. Right? Because of the aspect of volume. We take it, unless it's regularly used, then it can't mean it. Something that's used once can't have much authority. Mm-hmm. But in the Vedic sense, if the Vedas said it, it's authority, even if it's only said once. So we can see here's much of the discussion is over things that are mentioned in the Brahmanas, in a specific Brahmana. Like that. And so every Veda has so many, depending on the shakas, each shaka has those brahmanas. So some Veda used to have 1,000 shakas, so that means 1,000 brahmanas. Like that. So that's why Jiva Goswami says only 1/6 of the Vedic literature is remains with us, because all those brahmanas are gone. The four Vedas are still there, the Upanishads are still there, you know, at least the main ones, and that, and then some brahmanas, some aranyakas are there, but the volume of it's gone. Right? But for us, it doesn't matter. We have enough trouble accepting one. We only have to, you know, what is it? Which one do we use? The Brahmana. I'm just trying to remember. The Sakya Sardipika. That's that Brahmana. So we have a few Brahmanas that we use. We have that. We have then what's given for the deity worship and things like that. So we just follow that and that's it. Because before you had one line, you followed that. You didn't need all the lines. But the point is something in any one of them is authority. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah, so this thing saying, oh, well, that's an obscure thing. Now let's talk about this thing that has volume to it. That's not important. Yeah. It focuses on a statement made by Maharaj Indra to his beneficiary, Pratardana. One may justly inquire why the word prana is being revisited after having been dealt with a few adhikaranas ago. Is this... Oh, that's so few adhikaranas ago. Right? Is this adhikarana not redundant? Sri Baladevi Dibhushan explains why at the conclusion, at the pada, Shamshaya. This adhikarana, which explains identification of prana with Brahman, is unnecessary since prana has already been shown to be Brahman in an earlier adhikarana, 1.1.23. Uttara. That is not so. Previously, the doubt was only about the meaning of the word prana. Here, the doubt is about the proper object of meditation. Because in a section of the Upanishad related to bliss, there are words describing jiva and prana. The sadhaka might meditate on jiva or prana and not Brahman to attain bliss. To prevent this mistake, this adhikarana is given separately. Because then you're going to apply it. So they've established the Lord's position. But then there's application, there's goal, right? Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So you establish in one. If the other two are clear, then no need. But if not, then you are going to go forward and make sure that it's very clear about that. So, yeah. Okay. Earlier we deliberated on the word prana by itself and whether it referred to the life air or to the Supreme Brahman. Now our investigation includes the word prana. The word prana in relation to Ananda and Jiva, in turn revealing the rightful process of elevation and aims of life. Summary of Adhikarana 11. Vishaya. In the Kaushiki Brahmana, Pratardana, the son of Maharaj Devodasa, received a benediction from Lord Indra. Indra instructed Pratardana in the following words, I am prana. An intelligent person will worship me as the great immortal person. Shamshaya. Who is this person named Prana? Is he an individual spirit soul? Or is he the supreme personality of Godhead who resides in everyone's heart as the super soul? Purvapaksha. The words Indra and Prana here refer to a specific individual spirit soul. When Pratardana inquired, Indra replied by saying the worship of Indra was the most beneficial activity for the living entities. Siddhanta. Srila Vyasadeva responds to this argument in the following sutra, Pranas Tatanugamat. The word prana should be understood to refer to Brahman because of the context of its use. Right? So the great immortal person, so that's not Indra, because we know is he doesn't even make, he only makes it through 1/14th of a day of Brahma. So where's how immortal is that? Right? So it has to be something that's always applies. Sutra 1.1.28. Getting bigger and bigger. pranas tata anugamat. Prana, the word prana. Tata, in the same way, anugamat, because of the context. Prana indicates the Lord, not the jiva, since this is understood by the context. Shutra, right. If you're looking at it objectively to try to actually find out what it means, then you would see the context and be comfortable. If you have a motive that you want to prove everything is jiva, so that way then, you know, it makes your position better, or everything's illusion, then you're not going to look at the context, won't mean anything to you. Right? So that we see is just a very simple, straightforward, this is the context, this is what it means. Shutra Prakashika. In the Vedas, a jiva like Indra sometimes declares, worship me as prana, the life of all that lives. However, prana here must refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. Prana here cannot refer to the individual soul because of the context. The Supreme Lord is the life of the demigods and all living entities, and Indra is speaking on behalf of Brahman. Right? So the Vedic literatures, when they deal, we were saying about the Vedic presentation, is presented that it's all about the Supreme Absolute Truth. But the Supreme Absolute Truth has expanded himself through his energies into the full transformations that we see into the material world. Therefore, these verses can simultaneously, they mean about the Supreme Lord, but because it's his expansion, it also refers to the manifestation of this material world. But that's not the ultimate meaning. In other words, you have to see the context of talking about an aspect of this creation in connection to the Lord. That's proper seeing. So those who see the context of a particular verse in connection with a particular situation, leaving the Lord out of it, that's foolish. Right? So yes, it does have the aspect, but that's not what it's meaning. So by the context, you can understand if they're talking about, you know, Indra has the 1,000 eyes, or, you know, the Lord has. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is this, he is the controller of the universe, sees everything. Right? So from Krishna's point of view, it's to an advantage. Indra is the king of heaven, it's a disadvantage. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Set. Okay. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Vishaya. In the Kaushiki Brahmana 3.2, it is said, Patardano hava daivo dasir indrasya priyam dhamo pajagama. Patardana, son of Devodasa, went to the favored abode of Indra because of his valor. After this, Indra spoke to Patardana. Pradhana inquired from him what was most beneficial. Indra gave the following instruction. Pranasmi pragyatma tam mam ayur amritam upavasasva. I am prana, the intelligent atma. Meditate on me as the prana, the nectar of life. Shamshaya. Who is Indra referring to as the prana, the jiva, Indra, or paramatma? Purvapaksha. Since Indra is well known to be a jiva, the word prana also refers to a jiva. The jiva Indra asked by Pradarda says that worship of him is the most beneficial. Siddhanta. Pranastatanugamat. Prana indicates the Lord, not the jiva, since this is understood by the context. Indra indicates Paramatma when he speaks of prana. He is not referring to the jiva. Why? Because this is understood from the concerned passage, Tatanugamat. Saesha prana eva pragliranta mando jaro brita. Notice there the L with the dot under it? That's the L with the dot under it that used to be in our Sanskrit letters in Prabhupada's books. They took out because they say, you'll never come across it. You have now come across it. You know, because it's li. This is li. So that's the thing. In the Vedic Sanskrit, it's there. And so then, in the context, because we base everything on Veda, then it will come up now and again. Though not so much. It's rare, but the point is the Vedas talk about everything that's possible. You know, like Manu, whatever could possibly happen in society is discussed, not that everything will happen. Right? It means all the rules in Manu, one king may not come across all of them in his rule. But he'll come across some, a different king, and different ones, but they all have to be there, otherwise how you do? So that's the idea.
This word is quite a difficult pronunciation.
Yes, that's why when it's in the with the swaras it becomes easier. But yeah, no, they're hard to say. It depends upon who's talking. Then generally you'll see the Sanskrit is more difficult, less difficult, you know, different. Like when Brahma speaks, generally speaks in that 14 meter verse like this. So because there's different kinds of grammar. So what we learn is we've learned is Narayan's grammar, which is different from Shiva's grammar, which is in Panini. So most want to quote Panini, and he's accepted as the authority. But actually, Narayan's grammar is higher grammar. So you know, it's little subtleties. They're all options, but which options are taken is more subtle or less subtle. You know, it's like what do you call it? Like pineapple on the pizza. It's an option.
Not so,
but it's not so subtle as a margarita or something like that. So that's the whole idea, is that you have these things. So Indra is another one. Yama, Indra, all the different, I can't remember all the different, but eight different personalities. I think Kuvera is one of them. Then they have slight difference in it. So how they speak is also different. The words they prefer. So you see a certain personalities, all the words in the text are always very technical and complicated and hard to say. And others say very, very simple. Like Krishna does Gita, it's just so simple. Like that. But you'll find that in the Bhagavatam when you go through, depending upon who's talking, the verse is easier, more difficult, or prefers a different kinds of wording or like that. Is that
you have different accents?
I'm not sure if they have different accents. You know, if you can tell, he's from the Upper East Side, or like that, But no, that I can't say. But it's because I think that pronunciation is pretty straightforward. It's just how they would construct the words, because they're all proper. But it's just that there'll be a difference in what their preference is, like that. So. Did we finish Jaro Mrita? Okay. The prana is the intelligent Atma. Without old age, without death, Kaushi Taki Brahmana. Because these words refer to Brahman, not the Jiva, the prana that Indra mentions is also Brahman, right? Because without old age, without death. So it must be going beyond. Because the Jiva goes through these, right? Because if we're talking about the liberated Jiva, but the point is his position of liberation, he's still, limited like that. But so he has to get to that position. So how do you get to that position? By associating with Brahman, you come to that platform of Brahman. So by associating with the Lord, we will come to the transcendental position. Otherwise, if we just associate with another Jiva who is embodied, then, what's his name? Indra, at some point, his garland fades. That at that moment he's old, right? It goes all the way up, and then just that last few minutes, and then he's gone, right? And then he's deathless. This means then he's not Indra anymore. He's out. So it can't apply to Indra. So that means their point is Indra means the Jiva. They're not talking about Indra's body. They're taking it back to the Jiva. But the point is no, because he goes through that. It can't mean him. Otherwise, why would Indra be talking about it? Because you say, no, it's me, that would mean that particular Jiva that's in Indra's body. But because he's deathless, it can't mean him. So, yeah. Okay. Oh, we're over time.
Can I ask you about the mechanics of having 1,000 eyes?
It works. works.
What do you do when you roll over in your sleep? Do the half the eyes close and the other half?
No, you keep them all closed when you sleep. Yeah, and you only open the ones that are up. You know, it's obvious because if you have something, you have the pillow pressed to your eye, you can't open it anyway. So, like that. So you don't have to worry. It's worked out for me.
His sunglasses would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that would be.
Sunglasses?
His sunglasses would be interesting.
You just have to wear like a bag or something.
He's described as very beautiful. I don't see how a person could be beautiful with 1,000 eyes all over his body.
They're good-looking eyes.
Okay.
Kajal. Well, that's why he has assistants.
Right?
Putting on kajal. He has assistants. I'm sure he only puts it on two of them, you know. Everything else doesn't get the same treatment.
You have them all over his back and on his buttocks?
I don't know. These kind of things aren't really, because these things, as though interesting, we don't get any benefit from them. So that's why we don't worry about them. All it is he has them, it works out. You know, he can somehow, we don't hear that, you know, they offer him a seat, but he can't sit down because he's got eyes on his bum. So, you know, like that. So it seems to be, he can live life normally, just it's a bit of an annoyance. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi ki